Please help me welcome J. Lauren Norris.
It amazes me how many people have the gift of gab, but they don't have the gift of shut up. And part of the reason they do that is because, well, they fancy themselves a storyteller. They have lots of stories to tell. They just can't figure out which one to tell. And so, well, they kind of tell them all together, all at the same time, all at once, all blended together. It's the same story. There's a solution for that, and that's what I want to talk about in this episode of Leading Leaders. Stay tuned. I'm J. Lauren Norris with Leading Leaders Podcast. And I really am amazed how many people come to me as coaching clients and they're like, listen, I have the gift of gab. I can talk to anybody all the time. It's no issue. Just give me a microphone. Give me a chance and I will talk 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 and I will talk. And there's no guarantee anybody's going to be listening, but they'll still be talking. In fact, I was speaking with someone just the other day and they're like, have you ever experienced where people, they start to like nod their head, like, yeah, and then they start to finish your sentences for you, and then you realize they stopped listening a few minutes ago. It's like, well, yeah, I have to be honest. It's a problem I've had. I've worked very diligently, very intentionally to get past it. In fact, it's been a couple of years now, but someone who was a coaching client of mine also participated in a brainstorm session or a mastermind that we were invited to. In fact, we were borrowing a conference room, and the person we were borrowing the conference rooms from said, hey, I don't want you guys to have to stop your coaching session, but we need the conference room for a mastermind, and this is the scenario. We'd love you to participate. We kind of looked at each other and said, okay, why not? So we dove right in. And through the course of the mastermind, there was a lot of conversation, a lot of stories, a lot of, this is why I want to do what I want to do. This is what I'm going to do. This is how I'm going to fix it. And after the person we were all there to help finished talking, almost 40 minutes, then we kind of went around the table and everybody gave their 2 cents. And as is typical in a mastermind, most people speak from the lane of their expertise. They speak about what they know the best, what they've done the best, what they've had the greatest success with. That's where a mastermind has its greatest value. But as we went around the table, I didn't have anything to say until we got near the very end and everybody's like, you haven't said anything. I'm like, there's so much to be said, but I really have just one question. Why do you think the strategy that you have developed will make any difference? And the answer was crickets. Why? Well, because the primary objective of the whole mastermind was, I need to tell my story. I've got to tell my whole story. Everybody needs to know my whole story. My whole story is tragic. It's disastrous. It's a long story. It's here's everything that happened to me from the time I was born until yesterday. And who cares? If you've listened to this series on the Story Power Podcast, we've talked about everything from being original to being authentic to telling your story with integrity to being the person who has the authority to talk about the story, the originality and ownership of the story, being relevant to the people in front of you. You can't just tell your story because your story is important and everybody needs to know your life story, because it's not. It's just not. I know you feel like it is, and I'd be glad to discuss with you one-on-one why you feel like it is, because there is great merit to that, but how you deliver it isn't as a soliloquy or a soap opera unless somebody has asked you for the rights to make your life a dramatic movie interpretation or to be the ghostwriter of your book of your life. Aside from that, the chances are your whole life story and everything that ever happened to you has little bearing on anybody else in the world, because most other people are living in the same kind of drama. The same kind of nonsense at home, the same kind of dysfunction in their family, the same kind of roughness in their community. It's all the same. They don't need to know what you lived through. They need to know how you lived through it. And as I began to say these things to her, she was a little upset with me. She felt like I was criticizing her story. I said, it's not about criticizing your story. It's about asking, which portions of it will you deliver when and to whom? How do you help people? Who do you help? If those questions are not first and foremost, then the only purpose of telling your story is cathartic. It's to make you feel better. And I guess that's okay, but we usually call that a therapy session. See, there's something really powerful about understanding that the audience in front of you has a need. It doesn't matter if it's one person or 1,000 people. They have a need. Maybe in this moment, their greatest need, ready for this, is for you to listen. And that's it. Maybe their greatest need is some nugget of wisdom that you have from something that you've lived through. But if you don't listen first, you don't know what that is. And so you begin like you begin with so many others. You begin when I was 5 and I fell off my bicycle. And then yesterday when I ran the stop sign, it was related to when I was 5. But all the details between include the name of every cat and every dog and every neighbor and every street you lived on and every house you lived in and every car your parents ever owned, and nobody cares. What they want to know is, have you been through what I've been through? Do you understand the pain that I'm living in now? And do you have an answer for that? And can you give me that answer in a TikTok kind of time, not a Harry Potter novel kind of a time? Because I don't have Harry Potter novel kind of time. When you've taken the time, and this is the hard part, and that's what this lesson is really all about. The ability to hear the audience and understand what their need is, whether it's on the RFP that you get from the original request to come and make your presentation, or it's on that micro time frame, that tiny little seconds, minutes of facial observations, body language, whether they're in the audience of 1,000 or it's face-to-face and one-on-one, in that moment, you have the opportunity to decide, what am I going to say? And if the only thing that you have is a script that starts at, I was 5 when I fell off my bicycle and yesterday I ran a stop sign, oh my gosh, they're all in trouble. But if instead you have been diligent in preparing, you have been conscientious in crafting, you have been purposeful in prepping the story for the moment, the one that's relevant to this audience, relevant to the moment in time, relevant to the place and the location, relevant to the question they're asking, even if they haven't said, I have a question. But you know when you're conversing with someone, not lecturing them, but conversing, there's a nagging question inside them that may be revealed by the story that they tell you, by the thing they're going through in the day, what life looks like right now. And as you progress through those various elements of their life, you realize, I've had a similar problem. I currently have a solution. This is what I discovered along the way. In sales, we call it the feel, felt, found method. Wow, I see how you feel. I understand exactly how you feel. I felt like that myself one time, and here's what I found. It's identifying the problem or the pain, matching it with a solution that you've discovered. Now, maybe you are the solution. Maybe you're just pointing to the solution. Maybe the journey of the hero is some other hero, but you're pointing them in the direction of that. You become the guide that helps them to find what they're looking for. The book, the service provider, the product that's going to change their life. But see, when you've taken the time to mine the stories of your life, to ask, what was the major teaching point in that moment? What did I learn? How would I have done it differently if I came into that same moment again? If I had the same encounter, the same relationship, the same crisis, what would I do? Well, the answer to that question should be concise. It should be something you've taken the time to practice. How will I say it? What about these words? I was working with a client just recently that had a string of words together in a sentence that, well, they were word salad. I said, if you try to say that from the stage, and I noticed that the same set of words were throughout their entire presentation. I said, if you get in a hurry or you get distracted or you get emotional, that's going to become a word salad or a stumbly bumbly sentence. Those words, they don't help to clarify the word in front of them or the word after them. Does the sentence have a structure that makes it easier for people to understand when you're done talking, or more complicated? Do they have more questions about what you just said than what they were supposed to learn from what you just said? See, this is not incidental. This has to be intentional. Story mining should be about asking for those specific moments in time. And I'll tell you, a lot of the clients that I work with, when we do the one-on-one work, I hear commonly, I didn't realize I had so many stories in my life until I get on the phone with you or I get on a Zoom with you. And then all of a sudden, there are like stories coming out of the woodwork. Well, yeah, because we're looking for them. We're mining them. We're hunting for them. You don't find them by accident. You find them when you search for them. Now the question is, as you find them, what do you do with them? I want you to think for a moment of the panhandlers. They called them panhandlers because they had that little pan and they would scoop it in the river and they would shift it back and forth. And then they would put it into the screen and they would shift it back and forth. What are they looking for? They want all the debris and the big stones and all the other stuff to fall into the next pan. And as they would get into the pan, then they would sift again and they would sift again and they would sift. And the panhandlers were looking for gold. And sometimes what they would find is not real gold. What they'd find is fool's gold. They were mining for gold. Now, there were also gold miners who would actually dig a hole into the side of a mountain to go into the mountain looking for gold. And they had an idea where it was at geographically. And they had an idea how deep it was. And they had an idea what it looked like. And they also had an idea that as we get closer to a vein of gold in the wall, in the walls of this mine, it's going to look more like this. The soil is going to change. The rocks are going to change. We're going to be in the proximity of. And I'm going to tell you, some of the gold mine stories in your life are in the proximity of a story you've been telling forever that nobody cares about. In fact, it might be that if you just took the start of the story you've been telling and shifted it 10 seconds and added the end of that event, another 10 seconds onto the end of that story, just moving it changes the entire audience that you're talking to. Just leaving this phrase out and adding that one on could make all the difference in the world. It could be life-changing for somebody else. But see, that's the whole purpose of mining the stories. You're not looking for the fool's gold. You're not looking for the stuff that's kind of good. You're looking for the stuff that's really good. Then you're looking to massage that story, to meditate on that story, to spend some time with that story, to walk around your house, to walk around in the park, to walk around in the pasture. And tell that story to yourself until emotionally you get past narrating it and you begin to live it again. And all of a sudden you've got an emotionally impactful, powerful, true, lived story that you've earned the right to tell. You're eager to tell. You can tell it with enthusiasm. The passion in your voice takes you right back to the moment when it happened and you feel like you felt then. Not just the pain of the moment, but the victory that came as well. The I want to laugh and cry at the same time kind of moment that comes from the inspiration of a story when you find the victory and other people can just almost taste it with you. That's the power of a story well crafted. But that story has to be mined first, not made up. It's not fiction. It's hunted for. It's dug for. It's worked for. You're going to have to invest in it. You're going to have to invest in it emotionally because it might make you uncomfortable. You're going to have to invest in it with some time, mastering the linguistics, asking yourself, that 19-word sentence, could I make it 8? Could I make it 4? Could I say the same thing through an illustration that everybody would be familiar with? You know, sometimes in relationships, we ask those complicated questions like, what does she mean when she says fine? The answer to that question is very similar to the answer to the question, why is a pizza round in a square box and cut into triangles? I don't know. And I don't know that we will ever know. So the more time we spend asking that question, the likelihood we're probably never going to get an answer. And that's sad to be true, but it is true, and that's okay. Do you catch how the illustration fits right in there? What does she mean when she says fine? If I were having a conversation with a young married couple, I've been married almost 30 years, September will be 30 years. If she says fine, and the husband says to me, when she says fine, I thought it meant fine. Okay, that's good. Anybody who's been married more than a month or two knows fine is not fine. Fine is disastrous. But the answer to why does she say fine? Well, that's as much an enigma as a round pizza and a square box cut into triangles. I don't know. I don't know that anybody does know or ever will know. Go to eat Fratelli's. Their pizzas are square-ish, cut into strips of rectangles in an octagonal box. Whatever. Put it in a bag. It's a pizza. Who cares? But fine is kind of like that. It's an enigma. I'm not sure we'll ever understand. So let's move on to the next question. That illustration, that picture, it can become a laughable moment, but it also paints a picture with a very few words that 20 years of marriage still doesn't have an answer for. You follow me? See, that's the kind of working with the words in your head, messing with the story in your own head before it comes out in front of everybody else to say, is that really what I want to say? Do I really want to use those words? But even before you get there, you've got to mine the stories in your life. And remember, a story doesn't have to be over a period of a year. When you're mining for stories, it may be a moment in time. I tell my clients two things you need to know as we're working together. Number one, ideally, I would love to get to the end of our time together and know that you have 100 stories in your arsenal. Think of Elf when Elf was in the snowball fight. And the kid's making a snowball, throwing it, and making another snowball, throwing it, and making another snowball, throwing it. And meanwhile, Elf is over there like a Gatling gun, just snowball after snowball after snowball after snowball, because he's made a whole mountain of them in an instant. Your stories should be that readily available. There should be that many of them. You could just fire them off at a moment's notice. Not because you should do that. That's a really bad idea. That will turn off an audience in a heartbeat. But so that when the question comes up, whatever the question is, your answer isn't a 45-minute monologue. Your answer isn't, well, here's what I heard so-and-so say. I mean, that's okay if that's the best answer. But if you could look into that arsenal of snowballs, that mountain of snowballs, and know that each one is a minute and a half to 2 minutes long, and it's a solid, valid, relevant, poignant, impactful story that you could just pull out, wheel it right out there. Whether it's a radio interview, a podcast interview, the middle of a lecture, a conversation on the street, stop at the gas station. That 1 minute may change somebody's life, might literally save somebody's life. And sometimes just the opportunity, the willingness to interject, comes from the preparedness of saying, I know what to do in this moment. I know how to respond in this moment. I have ammunition for this moment. That moment is poignant. That moment is fleeting. If you have not been busy mining stories to build your snowball arsenal, then what's going to happen is you might get an insertion time to speak something into somebody's life, but because you're not prepared for the moment, you ramble on and 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 on with your gift of gab and no gift of shut up. And not only did you not help them in the moment when it was needed, but you bludgeoned them to death with a grilled cheese sandwich when what they needed was a scalpel. Yes, compare a grilled cheese sandwich to a scalpel. One is totally irrelevant to the moment. I know you're catching on to that. But I want you to think about how many times a scalpel was what was needed and what you pulled out of your bag of tricks was a grilled cheese sandwich. Had nothing to do with the moment. You felt like, well, I should tell this story, but it's not going to help anybody. It's not going to make any difference. That's a big deal. And if you truly care not only about communicating, not only about getting on the stage with a mic in your hand or in front of a camera with a mic in your hand or writing a book, you care not only about exposing your story for the cathartic method that comes along with it, but you truly believe that you've lived through some things that will make a difference in the lives of those who are hurting, then story mining is something you absolutely must generate the discipline to do. Here's the second thing I tell my clients. Not just that you should have 100 stories, but you should be so adept at story mining that if you tripped over a Coke can in the parking lot leaving here, it would generate a story for you. That every moment, every instant would be an opportunity for you to find another story with another teachable lesson and a powerful call to action. And in that moment, you would be able to see all the people around you and go, here's who participated in this event. Here's who was around me when it happened, who I was talking to, what I was doing, what was the emotional state, what was the nature of the day. Why? Because all of those things are the details that are relevant to the audience that you're talking to. When the people in your story look like the people in your audience cares. When the people in your story abandon your audience, the people in your audience abandon your story, and nobody cares. And at that point, you're talking, and nobody's listening. It's a powerful thing to find the stories that are like the gold in the river. Not the fool's gold, not the gold dust-covered mud, but the true nuggets of gold. And it's going to take some work. You're going to have to mine through them. And then when you find them, you'll have to refine them. Once you find them, you have to refine them. Polish them, clean them up, get all the stuff that doesn't belong in there. If you took that gold to a jeweler, they're going to set it on fire. They're going to melt it down to a liquid. They're going to scrape off the dross. They're going to purify it. They're going to shape it into something spectacular, like a wedding band. They're going to polish it. They're going to smooth it. They're going to shine it. Very few people, and I know in the 80s this was different. People actually wore little pendants around their neck that looked like gold that came right out of the river. It's kind of obnoxious. But I remember people having gold nugget bracelets, gold nugget necklaces, gold nugget chokers, gold nugget rings, gold nugget everything. But a nice piece of jewelry like this wedding band that almost never comes off my hand, that's a piece of gold that somebody has taken great effort to pull out of the ground, to shape into a ring, to polish into a shiny substance, to make something of great value. If your story isn't worth that much work, if you're not willing to invest that much in the stories that you tell, if you're not willing to build an arsenal of short stories, not 45-minute monologues, that doesn't tell me about the value of your story. It tells me how you value the audience you want to share it with. If your audience is worth investing in, then your story is worth investing in. It's worth mining. It's worth polishing. It's worth getting the dross out. It's worth refining. That's what I do. I help people tell better stories better. If you need a coach to work on that with you, call me. Send me a private message. I'm not cheap, but I'm good. And when you're done, you'll have stories that you never imagined were worth telling to other people. And they will be life transforming for you, because story power is an inside job, and for the people you tell stories to, because story power is a leadership tool. Wrestling with your story, mining your story, polishing your story, it will change your life. That's a promise. I'm Jay Lauren Norris with Leading Leaders Podcast for Tell It Like It Is TV. Have a blessed day.
Lauren is a master teacher on storytelling, and I learned so much. I'm really going to have to sit down and go back through everything, and I think I might have to have some more coffees with Lauren, but it was totally worth my time, and I really highly recommend it if you're looking to grow your ministry, grow your business, grow your career. Lauren will serve you well.
Thank you.
Subscribe now for our extensive video library of leadership lessons promoting faith, family, and freedom.